Welcome to Cybercast, decoding today's cyber issues. I'm Alexander Bolova, production lead at GovCIO Media and Research. With me today is managing editor Ross Gianfortuna. Hi, Ross.
Hello.
So you had the opportunity to chat with Travis Rosick, public sector CTO at Rubrik. How'd it go?
It went very well. We talked a lot about the NIST Cybersecurity Framework 2.0. It was just updated, the privacy side of things, with secure software development as part of that. And so he and I talked about the ways that things can be more safe and better for agencies and industry involved to be secure in light of emerging threats.
So tell me a little bit more about Travis. What perspective does he bring to these issues?
Travis has a lot of experience in industry and at Rubrik, and obviously he's public sector CTO, so he works a lot of agencies and has a fairly big, I would say, knowledge set of how to make these standards work for agencies and make these frameworks, move these agencies' policies forward and, again, keep things fairly safe.
Well, let's not keep our listeners waiting. Let's take a listen to your conversation.
In February, NIST released version 2.0 of its cybersecurity framework used in the public and private sectors. This edition of the framework is intended for all audiences, business sectors, and organizations, regardless of their experience or expertise in cybersecurity. Travis Rosick is the public sector CTO of Rubrik, and he's here to discuss the NIST Cybersecurity Framework version 2.0. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Ross. Very much looking forward to discussing some of the new changes in the latest version.
So let's talk about backups within this cybersecurity framework. So how do you ensure backup integrity with the evolving cyber threats and adversaries going after blind spots?
That's a great question. So, kind of to help some of the foundational or the background on that question, Rubrik's threat research group called Rubrik Zero Labs. We publish reports around collecting different metrics and data around attacks targeting the data itself, wherever it resides. So in our case, a lot of our focus is around data attacks focused on organizations' backups, whether that means the data reside, in the cloud, on-premise, in SaaS applications, et cetera. So kind of looking at the evolution there and the sprawl of data. I believe in the next, several years, we're going to have like 5 to 7x growth in data, just the volume of data organizations have to protect. So just kind of thinking about not just the compute costs for storage, protecting all of that data, just what potentially is impacted, knowing what you have, that problem is just growing. So highly recommend folks take a look at some of the Rubrik Zero Labs reports. They look a lot of industry analysis, some threat actors perspectives. But from the backup perspective, there's some really good details around some of the evolution of attacks. One thing that we're seeing is 90-some% of attacks, one of the first steps in those attacks is going after an organization's backup. So they're going after their backup services, their backup environments, and then they go after production. So and out of those 90+% of attacks targeting the backups, almost 3/4, and I think this is a big wake-up call, one reason from the NIST perspective, kind of focusing on this a little bit more in version 2.0, almost 3/4 of those targeted have some amount of their backups negatively impacted, if not all of it. So, really significant consequences. So if an organization or a threat actor goes after an organization's backup data, successfully degrades, diminishes their ability to recover those backups, and then they go after production with something like ransomware, and what keeps me up at night in the federal space is more so some type of destructive attack that where you can't recover from it, or it's not intended to be recovered. And then at that point, the threat actor has leverage against the victim. And from a national security perspective, that could be pretty devastating if organizations' backups and their production data are both impacted. So I think raising more awareness and what we're seeing on the commercial space, this is happening on a daily basis, you know, just checking the news. And, you know, the technical skill sets of threat actors to take these that have want to have this type of motive isn't technically challenging. It's just the human element and the motivation to go do something like this. So I think, you know, we should all really have a heightened sense of awareness and really take a look at making sure that our organizations and the data can be cyber resilient and making sure the backups can survive a cyber attack. Otherwise, you know, the way the trends we're seeing in the commercial space could be, you know, incredibly impactful in the government sector.
Yeah, they're certainly very connected, the private and public sectors, you know, in the cybersecurity world. But let's talk about future-proofing now. This is certainly something that is integral to avoid problems like having outdated legacy systems that are dragging agencies along. So how can government make sure that the tech they're using isn't getting too old too quickly?
You know, much like the human aspect, you know, I think to some degree, we're all kind of hoarders, you know, especially of data. You know, I'm sure most people don't clean out all of their emails. So just in general, the nature is to keep data because we're afraid, you know, if we get rid of it, we may not have it anymore when we need it. But most of the time, we probably don't use a lot of the data we're actually keeping. So same thing from a legacy IT system modernization perspective. You know, the fear of getting rid of something we're used to, you know, humans don't like change. However, cyber threat actors, you know, use that to their advantage and they successfully adapt regularly. So they kind of use the resistance to change of the victims in their favor. And, you know, from a, you know, compliance driven focus, which is where cybersecurity has been the last couple decades, compliance requirements that really can help accelerate some of this modernization are also very reactive and don't change quickly enough to keep pace with threat actors. So, so I think future-proofing it is from a compliance and policy perspective, you know, a very difficult challenge that most organizations are facing. But, you know, looking at cyber threats and kind of where organizations should be focusing for mitigating those attacks, I think the looking at what's important in your organization, what data, what systems are there, and looking at how you can make them more cyber resilient. So it's not so much, you know, if an attack's going to happen, it's more so when. And the real question is, you know, how can I recover quickly, and quickly being within, you know, hours or days, within a day, to reconstitute my environment and have some level of trust that I can still conduct my mission, support my customers, not lose data integrity. So the other aspect that I think goes missing is, you know, the integrity of the data, the integrity of the data backups is paramount. And making sure that, you know, one aspect is not losing the data or the backups, but also making sure that they're not modified or encrypted or other some other type of issue. So immutability around the backups and providing a kind of a defense in depth or kind of a zero trust implementation of the overarching security of backups is very important.
So we've mentioned the private and public sectors and the ways that they interact. Partnerships are very important in cybersecurity. So how can a broader community leverage the different roles that different organizations have?
Yeah, so definitely a big proponent of public-private partnerships. I think there are some inherent resistance to sharing certain data when it comes to different liabilities, you know, with the government. So the government is more more inclined to share data around cyber threats, trends, attacks. So CISA has really blossomed over the last couple of years in that space of producing a tremendous amounts of content, valuable content, collaborating with industry. So CISA over the last couple of years has really blossomed on the public-private partnership aspect. One area that they've really focused on is on a cyber safety review board. Some of the collaboration they've done with various organizations around cyber threats and trends. So within different parts of the government, DoD, Fed, civilian, IC community, also international governments and some of the focus internationally around mitigating cyber threats, and then working with industry, looking at some of the major attacks and breaches. What are some of the lessons learned? Helping organizations leverage. So they have the known exploited vulnerabilities database, and they help organizations kind of with the ever-growing vast amount of vulnerabilities or known vulnerabilities. Organizations struggle to keep pace with patching and mitigating all vulnerabilities. So one thing that has gained a lot of traction is the KEV, known exploited vulnerabilities list. And that's kind of helps the organization prioritize maybe what attackers are targeting now, so they can kind of get ahead of that and minimize being a victim of what's actually happening now. So the speed of that collaboration, sharing that information and making it actionable has really made a positive impact.
So we've talked about the supply chain here on these microphones before, or I have at least. How can agencies ensure that their cybersecurity is maintained within the NIST framework and within the supply chain?
Supply chain as cybersecurity is definitely one of the more complex, harder challenges to mitigate from a risk perspective. You know, it's from a complexity and impact perspective is, you know, kind of similar to the insider threat problem as well. Where you've vetted something, you rely on it and you trust it, and then to have that somehow surprise you and do nefarious things that you weren't expecting, really is a kind of new paradigm at kind of the scale and impact that we've seen the last couple of years. So I think even this week there was a recent supply chain kind of attack, similar to Log4j, that happened within the Linux operating system and some of the releases there. So I think raising awareness, having the governance perspective now within the 2.0 framework really raises that overarching awareness around the impact to the overall business or the organization, not just the compliance checkbox approach. You know, so having from a acquisition perspective, looking at what vendors and your supply chain are, what they're building, how they're building their tool sets and software, how they're securing themselves, and taking all of those things into account before you make an acquisition decision. And then when you deploy capabilities, you know, getting back to some of the other themes you probably had on your podcast in the past, defense in depth is uber important. Zero trust architecture, so verify then trust. So kind of assume some of the worst case scenarios have happened in your environment. So maybe an admin is compromised, or an account is compromised, or one of your security tools or underlying infrastructure software has been impacted by a supply chain attack. Making sure you have fail safes to segment, isolate, contain, and survive an attack kind of like that, and kind of build that into your architecture. So I think trying to bolt on or be reactive from a cybersecurity perspective when we're dealing with, nation state attacks, admin level attacks that mimic insider threats or supply chain software attacks. If you don't build in some of this resiliency, some native redundancy in your environment, it's going to be much more difficult to survive it. So I think the NIST cyber framework, trying to put more emphasis and raise awareness around these risks, can help organizations better protect themselves going forward.
I can't have a conversation about cybersecurity at this point in history without asking about emerging technology like artificial intelligence. So what kind of risks are associated with emerging technology like AI?
Yeah, that is a great question and something that, you know, keeps me up at night ever since I was a kid and saw the Terminator movies. So NIST has published an AI RMF guidance. It covers a lot of ground in there. I don't know that. I think just, you know, AI is a big buzzword, but it's not really a thing you go by. You know, it's a tool that helps you solve a problem, right? And there's so many different types and applications that go into how you operationalize and integrate that into the problems that you're trying to solve or your organization's mission. So I think getting past the buzzword phase, I still think there's a lack of real awareness around all of the moving parts around implementing artificial intelligence within an organization, and then taking a step below that foundationally of how do we actually secure this? How do we maintain and keep it secure through the whole process? So one area that I don't think gets enough focus is around the importance of data in the AI construct, and specifically data integrity. So from an AI system to work properly, the effectiveness of the models and the classifiers, et cetera, are really dependent on how it was trained and how it was built and how it was tested. And the building blocks of that are the data. So how do you prune the data? How do you select the data and the features, et cetera, that are used to build the classifiers? So one attack vector that concerns me or I raise awareness around is data poisoning attacks. So if you can't get actually, from a threat actor perspective, target the classifiers or the application itself that's using it, an easy way or an easier way potentially is to go around that whole mechanism and go after the data sets and the data sets that are used to build the models. So if I can't really break the model directly, I can potentially, negatively impact the performance of the AI system by messing with the data that's used to build it. So its efficacy, its performance, and it's very stealthy in that you wouldn't really know it didn't work right until it was too late. So I think having more focus on the data security, data integrity part that goes into building AI and emerging technologies is super important. And from my motto really is more focused on being proactive in cybersecurity versus reactive. And I think the way things are evolving, obviously it's more costly to be reactive in cybersecurity, but unfortunately, a lot of organizations that's kind of how they operate. We wait for something bad to happen and then we go figure out how to fix it. I think the stakes are evolving to the point now with the rapid adoption of artificial intelligence, looking at the destructive nature of malware and ransomware, that the opportunity or the potential to actually react to a cyber attack is getting less and less possible going forward. So I think, the assumption is, we can wait for something bad to happen and then go back and fix it. I think the probability of being able to go back and fix it is getting lower and lower, as every month or day goes by.
Yeah, it certainly is not getting easier by any stretch. So that is certainly something anyone in charge of cybersecurity in any organization needs to be aware of. Travis, thanks so much for being on the show with us.
It was a pleasure. Enjoyed the conversation, Ross.
Thank you, Ross. That was an interesting conversation with Travis. Before we let our listeners go, are there any last highlights or takeaways that you want to leave them with?
Just that Travis and I talked a little bit about machine learning, AI, and the threats that can pose. as well as the ways that AI can be a defense against some of the things like data poisoning and, you know, bad information being put through these systems that can really mess with cybersecurity. So that's, I think, toward the back half of the conversation, but it was certainly the most interesting part to me.
Definitely. Well, thank you again, Ross. Listeners can tune in next week for a brand new podcast in our GovCIO Media and Research podcast feed. But until then, if you like what you heard, make sure you leave a review and a 5-star rating on the podcast platform of your choice. And hey, tell a friend. We always appreciate growing our audience. I'm Alexander Bolova.
I'm Ross John Fortuna.
Thank you for listening. Cybercast, along with GovCast and HealthCast, is a production of GovCIO Media and Research. To explore our content, visit our website, govciomedia.com. Keep an eye out for new episodes every Tuesday. And if you like what you heard, leave us a review on the podcast platform of your choice. Have a topic you want us to discuss? Contact us at newsletter@govcio.com.